And welcome to the second season of Seniors in the Building. We are four friends exploring aspects of aging together. Our conversations run the gamut from humorous to serious to maybe outrageous. We hope to hear from new voices this year as we invite guests into our conversations. Thanks for being with us. Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick. So, welcome. Hard times, wild times, and suffering. This topic came out of Jack's idea, what do we become less tolerant of as we get older? Now, not wanting to devolve into some sort of a bitch session, we broadened it and thought maybe we could reframe it as, what are the hard times we have lived through? What made them hard times and what did we learn from them? Do our hardships have an impact on what we have become less tolerant of today? And then during the conversation, we also talked about the word suffering and how it has been understood through the ages. Is hardship also suffering? And what about wild times? Does that equate with hard times or things we live through that also leave a mark on us? How do these experiences impact our tolerance? And do we become less tolerant of some things or some behaviors because of our experiences? So, hard times, wild times, and sufferings. Go.
Go. I knew that was going to come as, you know, when somebody posts on Facebook and they have some kind of question, we say, go. Yeah. And there we go, right? Interesting. I think the last part of it caught me up. How do these experiences impact our tolerance, and do we become less tolerant of some things or behaviors? I think that there was a very long period of time in my life where, because of the trauma in our family, and I was kind of smug about this. I was one of the people who went to a counselor regularly, and you know, took care of that kind of reframing of it. And I don't have much tolerance for the BS that comes out of the people who've done nothing about it. And so that's something I have to deal with personally, you know, and kind of figure out what do I do with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it becomes somewhat less tolerant.
Yeah. I struggled with the topic because, like it says when you read up on matters like that, it means involving acknowledging your emotions, and that means opening up, and that's not easy because it makes you vulnerable. Maybe sometimes it leads you down a path that and to emotions you didn't realize you had. So just a very, very tough topic, and sometimes, and maybe that's sadly that's the male gender upbringing too, you know, tough it out and don't acknowledge your emotions. But I think it's important to try and identify some of these hard times or wild times that we have and what we perhaps learned from them. So,
I don't think it's just male. I grew up in a Scandinavian culture where emotions were not really expressed.
Oh, yeah.
And you were stoic about it. It's almost... And very unhealthy. And so I have struggled all my life to express feelings and emotions. And and I've gone several times to counseling as well to try to work through that and be more open and vulnerable. And it's still very hard. And it makes those hard times even harder. And it also makes it, you start to tolerate things longer than you actually should.
Yeah, in some ways that's very, very true, yeah. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, when you do. Yeah. I also think that depending on what the trauma was, right, or what I've learned from counseling courses that I've taken, you know, especially, for example, if you have an alcoholic in the family, right? Well, all the energy in the family goes into making sure that the alcoholic is a happy person or taken care of or whatever. And so
enabling
your emotional
them.
Responses yeah. don't
yep. There's no room
don't
for
matter.
There's
no
room.
Room for anybody else in the family to have any emotional emotions showing, right? And so then you tend to push them right down until, of course, like emotions do, they got to pop back up again. And lots of times they'll happen through tears or anger or whatever kind of stuff. So,
Well, I wonder why our culture, and I think our culture does do it, isn't open to suffering. Because that's the last thing anybody wants. So there's all kinds of resolutions to suffering that are imposed subtly on us to be happy. Well, what's this thing about being happy? Seriously, like it's sort of an ideology that is imposed. Happiness is above all else what you want. No, it's not, from my perspective. And maybe that's the curmudgeon in me. It's just not. It's shallow and often inappropriate. So one of the things after I was divorced in my first marriage in my 20s, I went to seminary searching for meaning and searching for meaning. And of course, I was sent to counseling, and then I was sent to do this CPE, right, down in Texas, in Corpus Christi. And one of the things that came out of that month in the hospital, that's where the CPE was, Clinical Pastoral Education, was, I don't think you've resolved this divorce issue. You know, your heartbrokenness over it. And so I did a second unit of SPE here in Winnipeg when I was on internship. And, you know, and I concluded, I don't think just on my own, that there's no resolution. You simply live with it. You live with the brokenness. But our culture tends to say, oh, no, no, it's got to be healed. Well, there's some wounds that are not healable, that you simply live with them better than you did the previous day or, you know, the last year. You live with them. So one of the residues that, is that the word, residues? Residuals that continue with me in terms of heartbrokenness is a sensitivity to other people's hearts being broken. So, you know, I learned
that... Henry Nouwen would call that the wounded healer.
Sure, the wounded... Yeah, excellent, yes. And who was my favorite person when I was in the parish preaching? Him.
Okay. Really?
Yes.
Oh, my
gosh. I had all his books.
Yeah, yeah.
Henry Nouwen, right?
Yeah, Henry Nouwen's Wounded Healer was one of my major readings, too, that changed my life in a lot of ways.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, you know, this time of year, we're approaching Christmas, and often people who are in grief and struggle, that's where they really feel the pressure to be happy, to be joyful.
Yeah, to be happy.
And I know some churches, and also I think some support groups, put on special events or special services to acknowledge people who are suffering, struggling, grieving, and who are outside of feeling outside of this sort of uplifting spirit of jolliness.
That's a good way to put it.
And I think, I think it does help. Although I think some people, when they say a family member goes to those services, where they expect them, like you say, Jack, to come out to be healed and jolly and reconciled. Okay, you've dealt with that, you're done. But in fact, I think that kind of services, those kinds of gatherings also emphasize you are really struggling, you're going through a real hard time, you're suffering, and that's okay. And you have to not pretend now that you've gone through some kind of a group thing or a service that now everything is fine.
Yeah, and don't beat yourself up about it.
And don't beat yourself up about it, which is...
I think that's probably what you're talking about, Jack, when you think society doesn't allow for that to happen. And it's true. I mean, somebody dies and people are sympathetic and initially, and then you know,
3 weeks later, you
think
forgotten.
You should be over it by then. But it isn't that way. Suffering and loss, all of those things leave their marks, and they are, we are long to adjust in many ways, and we're changed. I think that's the thing that gets missed. When things happen to us that are painful or hard, we are changed by them. Mm-hmm. And so when we, when people expect us to be the same, or we expect ourselves to bounce back and be the same, that's I think that's the fallacy, that we'll bounce back and be the same.
Yeah.
We are changed, and and acknowledging that, and accepting that, I think is.
Yeah, I think
really
about,
important.
Yeah, I think about my own personal loss. You know, I was 26 years old when my parents died, and I was, I don't know, not quite 2 months pregnant with my second child, and had a toddler running around the house, right? And so they died, and we were moving to a new, you were moving to a new job, Rick, and a new community, and everything was in upheaval. And I managed to just bear with it, because I thought, well, for the kids' sake and Rick's sake, and we can do this, right? And carried that stuff until, like, for 7 years, until the kids started school. Well, we're into school, right? And one day I woke up and realized they're all gone, and I'm sitting here, and I have no job, and I have too much time on my hands. And I just, it just started to, the grief just was so overwhelming.
Started to surface.
To not even get out of bed in the morning, right? Until Rick would come back out in, after, in the afternoon, and get me up and get me dressed so I could meet the bus for the kids coming home from school. So he could go back to work and do his work, right? And we did that, you know, for a few months, I think, when we first got there. But, you know, you got some help.
Yeah, you sought help.
Yeah, I sought help, right?
And went to a counselor.
Yeah, and that's what the counselor said too, right? You know, you just manage to be busy, fill your life with all the other things, and you don't give time for yourself to do the work that you need to do for yourself, right? The rest, the talking about what happened or whatever. And that was a deep learning curve for me to realize that. And one of the things she was very realistic about, this will be always with you. You will never get over this trauma.
Right.
But you will be able to grow from it. Like, it won't
and
always be positive.
Yeah.
And to live with it and figure out how to deal with it, right? And so that trauma's been there.
Yeah, and it also has made you more sensitive to other people who struggle in a similar way. Just, Jack, like you said, it's always made you, you know, because of your experience, more sensitive. And if you want to say there's a positive, that's maybe it. It has, like you say, it's changed you, but it has also made you more empathetic and open.
It's
and
a humanizing and process.
Yes, yeah.
You become a little bit more human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that
language. Meaning sensitive to other people's suffering.
Yeah.
And everybody is suffering.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of trauma and fear out there.
Yeah. And it's exacerbated and sometimes intentionally intensified by, we won't say who, right? Fear.
Yeah.
Because fear is, if people are afraid, then you can offer solutions to that fear.
But they have to be willing to and open to.
No, I meant you can offer it artificially wrongly so.
Yeah.
You know, politically, that's what's happening. The instilling of fear of the other or whatever, of economic hardships, and then you offer a solution. And that's the formula for dictatorship.
Yeah. I think what that means in my mind is that some people take advantage of that. That's one reason why, going back to my statement that it's hard to sort of acknowledge and talk about this, because it leaves you vulnerable, because there are a certain number of people who will then not try to support or work, help you work through it, but will take advantage of it. And that makes you very cautious and very defensive, I think.
Yeah, and you're referring to trust, you know, and who you choose to trust and who you choose to share with and who you choose to spend your time with really has to be someone that you can trust and someone that you know cares for you no matter what. And that, I think, is the the message of happiness in some ways, because happiness isn't... I've read a lot about happiness over my lifetime. I've got a whole shelf full of books about happiness.
Happy books.
Yeah. But it's not... But they're heavy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what
they
I
aren't, yeah. They aren't... light and joyful and blah 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 blah. They aren't. Yeah. They're really. It really dealt. Happiness is really based on the work that you do around your suffering, mm-hmm. and around your pain, and mm-hmm. around, you know, working through and accepting and changing and moving forward from the things that happen to you and that you experience. And that happiness isn't really achievable without suffering.
Mm. I just had this crazy thought too, you know, in terms of thinking about this podcast and always talking about what we're learning as we're growing older, right? When people talk to you about planning for your retirement, you know, they're asking you to plan for your economic freedom. They're
That's
asking
gonna
you,
be so exciting.
And you're gonna have all these hobbies and all this kind of stuff. And the one thing they don't talk about is what's going to happen when your mind is wide open and it doesn't go have to be used to go to work every single day, and suddenly now you are starting to reflect on your pain and your exactly. suffering and your long-term grief and all of that. And that gets sort of molded into that whole getting old kind of thinking.
It does. You're absolutely right.
It's overwhelming.
It's that stopping everything and all of a sudden... It's always amazing to me what emerges in that silence and in that quiet.
Yeah.
And in that, you know, looking for something to do, because it's often, for me, it's often the going over the things, the mistakes that I've made and chastising myself for those. And then I give my head a shake and say, wait a minute, you know, just wait. How can you reframe that? Because that's not helpful. I think really, yes, you need to sort of think about those, but you need to think about your life in a context of doing the best you can with what you have at the time. Mm-hmm. And allowing your younger self some slack around that. Mm-hmm. And that's often hard, because we carry those things and they fester, like you say, Elaine, and they emerge, and all of a sudden you've got these other things that you have to deal with when you thought you were retiring.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think about the stories that are recorded from war veterans, from Second World War veterans,
exactly.
when they get into their 70s, and they're just suddenly all of this stuff kind of pours out of them,
from
right?
the war.
And we did have that experience with your mother, because we were... One night the pastor called us and he said, have you ever heard your mother's story? You know, said to Rick.
Yeah, I heard bits and pieces.
Bits
but
and
not
pieces.
All that she shared, no.
And she had apparently just started to unload her story on him of the trauma of World War II and the losses and all that kind of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's because she had time to think about what was, what had happened in her life, who'd she...
And able to talk to someone she could trust.
Yes. Yeah.
That is the key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is
that
the key.
That was important for
her.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I learned through counseling numerous times was that there's no quick fix and there's no resolution. But there is a listening and verbalizing the pain. And in the listening, that is a compassionate, listening person sitting there, there's healing. Though no resolution.
Yeah.
And I remember in seminary, and this was kind of a shock to me, one faculty member who taught pastoral care, apparently, and he didn't say this, but I'd heard it, so it's kind of apocryphal, that he had trouble in a faculty meeting legitimizing the presence of pastoral care courses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In other words, teaching would-be professional caregivers about what it means to care for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And often that's just listening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he apparently stood up on the table and screamed at the faculty.
Mm. We didn't have quite the same kind of...
Wanting to be heard, yeah.
Wanting to be heard.
Yeah, from our professor, but the same thing. And I think it basically came down to the fact that you had to listen to people's stories. Let them say the things that they need to say, you know, and don't give them platitudes. Don't give them, you know...
Instant resolution.
No, and just say... And one of the things we were taught was... How would you reframe that today then? If this is how it was, how do you think about that story today, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought that was helpful because then it showed us where we had some growth. And just a bit, but it was enough.
And that's really difficult. I remember in one of the units I did in CPE, well, in both units actually, they did this methodology. Mm-hmm. That is, the method was that you write a verbatim report about you talking to a hospital person you visited.
Yes.
And then we'll critique it. So it was rather brutal, you know, because you're sitting there and you're going through what you said, what she said, what you said, she said. And what they wanted to do, and it was so useful, is to point out where you were blocking, where your agenda...
Yeah,
got in the way of just listening, and you spoke.
Yeah,
why did you speak at that point? Were you uncomfortable?
Right. I always thought writing verbatims was a specific kind of suffering inflicted on us.
Sitting there trying to
recall what happened.
Filling in a chart at the hospital. You know. Like,
when I was doing my clinical degree, we did verbatims ad nauseum.
Yeah.
But like, you do learn your own, you know, your own, I didn't want to hear the rest of that.
Yeah, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. And and it really taught you to be get beyond or to listen. If it's triggering something in you, it means you need to listen harder and just focus totally on that person. And then later you can go and examine sort of your own issues as they arise.
So there again, there are means to help us process our hard times or our suffering, or even our wild times, but then also to be a resource to others, to be there for others. Again, this idea that it's not just about us, but often then it can lead us to become people who can work with, help with, counsel, support others who are going through similar situations. So, you know, one of the things that always sticks with me, and some of this was triggered the other day by a CBC on The Current, they were talking about bullying in schools.
Oh.
And grade 7 and 8 and 9 are the worst years, they say. And all of a sudden, I was going back to my grade 7 and 8 years, which were just horrible. And especially grade 7, just a ton of bullying. I mean, and to this day, I'm sensitive, or maybe overly sensitive, to bullying and the need to step in when it's happening, or if I perceive that it's happening.
Interesting.
Sometimes overreacting, but again, it was a huge negative. And every time I think back on, especially that one year, I just rather would not think about it. But it does lead to perhaps me taking some action. So
I think it's a subtle art to learn when someone is sharing with you their pain. It's a subtle art in terms of what to do, because what often happens, I think, rather spontaneously and unreflectively, is that people will say, oh yeah, I've been there. I've had that pain. And that immediately, it's honest and it's true, but it diminishes the speaker as if, okay, I know what you're going through, when you really don't know what they're going through. Because the psychodynamics are so complex and subtle. At the same time, there are things that can be said that do, I think, console. And, you know, I'm the last person to quote the Bible, but I do have a quote
sure.
from the book of Romans. Paul is speaking. He says, I have labored in vain. I've spent my strength for nothing at all. So this is a man in despair, mm-hmm. you know, and he was probably died thinking all was lost because he had hoped for the second coming of Christ. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't happening. Mm-hmm. And he probably died in 62 AD when Rome was burnt down mm-hmm. by the barbarians, I think.
It was some kind
or
of
the
fire.
Visigoths.
So we have whenever that was written, it wasn't written in that time, but it was written later about him. But it reflects, I think, historically, suffering and pain has been with us, with humanity, yeah. for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think
yeah.
that's what that says to me, and that we have made some grounds, maybe, in accepting and understanding, but I still think we struggle when we're in pain. I do. Mm-hmm. I struggle when I'm in pain, and I'm never quite sure what to do, and I'm never quite sure how to express it, and I'm never quite sure what my next step should be, and it's hard. It's hard to work through those things when they come at you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why we try so hard to make sense of it, or to try to find some meaning behind it, because it seems so, sometimes so arbitrary.
Meaningless,
yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, not to make it about me, but I think, you know, Jack's health issues as we retired have been a struggle.
Yeah.
And have
mm-hmm.
been... And continue to be, exactly,
yeah.
as our bodies fail, and accepting that, and finding the energy to work through the next problem that comes physically. And mm-hmm. it's hasn't, back to the retirement sort of thing, and mm-hmm. what your expectations are, it just hasn't been, I think, for sure, the retirement that you had hoped for, I know.
Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough just recently to go to the eye doctor, because two people I have known, one lost his sight in one of his eyes, hmm. and the other has macular degeneration.
Oh, yeah.
And so I went to get checked, and lo and behold, in one eye they found glaucoma,
oh.
which is the silent killer of sight.
Yes. Hmm.
If it's not diagnosed, so I'm on a drop now, mm-hmm. and maybe laser treatment to reduce the pressure in that eye, hmm. so I can still see.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, mm.
It feels like when you're post 65 or even 60, there's just one thing happening after another in terms of our health, right?
Yes,
you know, like
true?
Just sort of changes it up and
yeah,
and you know, it kind of whacks you across the
back of the head.
Because yeah, that's right. Because you think, oh well, I'm managing quite well, and in fact, I will say I have been a bit smug about that, because I have been able to just sort of watch, well, not just watch, but be as anxious sometimes about Rick's health issues for the first time in our whole marriage, right? That he has actually got the health issues, and I'm sort of like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, I can help him get through that. Although there are moments when I don't help.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah.
No,
like,
I'm fine. Everything's fine. Everything's good. Or not, yeah.
Or you're only taking two pills. You don't know what it's like to take six or seven or
yeah.
whatever, right?
Yeah. It's, but that disparity is harder, too.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that's part of this aging process, right, is that there is going, we have to expect that there's going to be some suffering, and there's going to be, and now I'm realizing there is going to be some much more reflection
uh-huh.
about the most traumatic times of my life.
Exactly.
Not, you know, it's I'm revisiting some of that mm-hmm. again, and feeling like the emotional overload is just a little too much,
yeah.
you know, right?
Yeah,
I
because
agree.
The health, you know, the physical stuff, you can sort of figure it out, and you have somebody to work it through with you, you know, a healthcare professional. but not always in that emotional kind of
stage. The whole wild time thing around chaos and that emotional instability around just what's going to come next. You know, it's that getting that under control, that whole fear of the future, I think, is a part of it too. Like, okay, what's going to happen next? And and the important thing is, I think, to try to live in the moment and do what you can in the moment, because
does that lead to wild times then? Like, I'm going skydiving. I'm taking a trip around the world next week, or no?
Well, I came very close to going back to India. That would have been a wild time. And, you know, my stability is not there to be in the crowded streets of
India. Is no
Delhi.
Place for somebody with balance problems.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have another quote from Paul.
Yeah.
And I've always liked this quote, actually. And I tried to understand why. I mean, Paul is attributed to have basically created Christianity in terms of the theologies that are central, both Catholic and Protestant. And the quote is from the book of Romans. He's writing to the Romans. I do not understand what I do. For what I want to do, I do not do. But what I hate to do, what a wretched man am I. Who will rescue me from this body that is subject to death?
Yeah. Seems like things are out of control for him.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think part of the appeal of his writings is that he's confessional. He's always confessing his shortcomings and his fragility.
Mm. Yeah.
And so you don't have to be a believer to appreciate that. But just listen to it and hear. The same with the Psalms, right? Mm-hmm. The laments and the Psalms are appropriatable by anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But comfort in reading about other people's trials and tribulations, there's something in that, I think. I read a lot of biographies of people, and some of the things that people that are great entertainers and performers, some of the things that they have gone through is incredible. Like, just incredible hardship and pain and suffering and insurmountable obstacles to achieving what they want to achieve. And sometimes that's helpful if it's a story that you resonate with and hopeful.
So that, again, that strikes me as when we're going through hard times, through suffering, to find compassionate, empathetic supports.
In many ways.
Who can identify with us. Mm-hmm. We can identify with.
Somebody to talk to, somebody's story who you can read and resonate with and gain from. Finding ways, you know, that just on a daily basis can ground you and keep you little routines or rituals that can ground you, like having a cup of coffee and talking to my sister for a minute and kind of being just grounding myself that way.
And I think for me, beyond that, sometimes that means also getting involved in certain groups, not just to support yourself, but also to take action. I'm thinking of this growing wealth inequality and the matter of homelessness and that. And rather than us just sort of, tolerating it, maybe it's time to get out there and really push back at the forces, at the people who are creating these issues.
If you have the emotional energy.
That's true. But that's why I think by ourselves, but that's why it's a collective.
In a group,
thing.
In a group and doing what you can.
So I think sometimes addressing the matter of suffering and hard times means really going at it. And down through history, there are some good examples. Maybe one quick one is the whole adoption of, say, what we call socialized medicine, right? A lot of that is in reaction to the inequality of care that people would receive depending on how much they could afford. And again, I mean, it was a broad political movement and took quite a few years to establish. But on the other hand, it gained support and it made sense, and people saw that this could deal with some of the suffering that people had. Or, to use the medical analogy a little further, now the anti-vax movement seems to really be gaining traction in some areas, and that is really scary, because if you think of the kind of suffering that contagious diseases can yes. bring, and so there's a real need to push back against that anti-vax movement, and to ally with doctors and leaders who support that, because it's downright dangerous, and it does lead to a lot of hard times and a lot of suffering.
Oh yeah, when you see measles coming back and children
yeah.
suffering and dying because of it, there's no reason for it.
It talk about senseless suffering. That there is no reason. There are solutions
when there are
to
vaccines.
That. Yeah, there are
exactly.
vaccines. Yeah. So I don't know if we wanted to take it down that path, but it just struck me that sometimes the matter of dealing with suffering means getting out there, identifying what is the source, if it can be found, and then how do we deal with that?
Getting outside ourselves
yes,
in some
yeah.
ways and helping contribute to solutions to social problems is kind of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Yeah, because I think many aspects of suffering are inflicted by human behavior,
yeah.
human behavior actions.
Or inaction.
Or inaction, yes, yeah. exactly, yeah. So not in every case, and certainly I don't think the struggles we have as we get older are because of somebody else's. It just kind of happens, but in many cases it can be because of what other people create or systems that they have created to benefit a few mm-hmm. and to harm many. So. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we can leave it for today. If you were hoping for a lot of juicy stories about wild times or hard times, I don't think we kind of went that route very much, but hopefully it gave you some sense of hope, some sense of perhaps why this is a difficult topic, but why there are also ways for us to live together and to be able to be supportive of one another
and
as we go through hard times.
And also to know you're not alone.
That's right. You know we're not alone. Thank you for listening today.
Thanks for spending this time with us on Seniors in the Building. If you enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love for you to follow us. Join our growing community. And keep sharing in the stories, wisdom, laughter, and life as seniors. Until next time, stay curious and seek hope. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by Seniors in the Building, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. You can also leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design, and Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input and the support of all of our families in this endeavor, for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love.